Why is it I can't remember what day it is ever? 26.
Because the days go too fast.
All right. For Commissioner Christman. How's that?
Perfect.
All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Colquhoun meeting in the 12th floor of the Capitol today for our regularly scheduled commission meeting. It is Wednesday, March 26th, a little bit after 10 a.m. The only comments I would have this morning is I'm looking forward to the University of North Dakota playing the Badgers this weekend in hockey, just to prove that I can cheer for someone besides the Bison. So that's all that I have this morning. Commissioner Christman?
Can't top that. I have no opening comments.
All right. Commissioner Fedorchak?
No opening comments for me either.
Nothing at all. Okay, perfect. We have several items on consent. I would move passage of the consent items.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Since none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And also want to thank Alana for covering the last meeting that we had, where she's at. So good to have you back, Darrell, but we were able to soldier on. Yeah. Okay, item BK1. I move the commission adopt the findings of fact, conclusion of law, and order issuing a certificate of site compatibility number 37 to Basin Electric Power Cooperative authorizing construction of two additional 45-megawatt combustion turbine generators at its Lonesome Creek Station in McKenzie County, North Dakota, case number PU-12-790.
Second.
A little background on this case. In November of 2012, Basin Electric filed a letter of intent to construct the Lonesome Creek Station consisting of two 45-megawatt simple-cycle natural gas combustion turbines to be co-located with its existing Lonesome Creek Station, Unit 1, which is also 45 megawatts. Just a note, no longer a company is required to file the letter of intent, so we don't get the letters of intent anymore, but that's fine. I think it was a needed or worthwhile change. The commission acknowledged the letter of intent, assessed the filing fee of $57,000. December 18th of 2013, the commission deemed the application complete, issued the appropriate notices and hearings, and we conducted the hearing January 28th at 10 a.m. up at Teddy's in Watford City. A little more background. Basin, of course, is a 137-member distribution co-op serving 2.8 million customers in 9 states, including North Dakota. We talked about adding the two 45-megawatt generators. The project will be located 14 miles west of Watford City in Section 23, Township 150 North, Range 107 West for the exact location inside of McKenzie County. The project will be designed and constructed to meet all relevant state and national code standards, including the National Electric Safety Code. It will be owned and operated by Basin Electric. The total cost of this project is estimated to be $102 million. The construction, they're hoping to begin by May of this year and expected to be completed by the end of 2014. A couple other things as we went through the hearing. The area has been zoned industrial. It's approximately 160 acres. They've received the required permits from the EPA. The State Historical Society has concurred that there is no historic properties affected. Basin Electric will engage in erosion prevention and sediment control during construction. And really, I think, from my viewpoint, it was a very solid project. It was needed to help them out meeting some of their peak demand in this part of North Dakota. What should be noted, though, is that while these are, I think, definitely needed projects, this does not solve the long-term concerns that Basin Electric has to provide baseload in this region. So I look forward to supporting this project, and I think it's a very worthwhile project. And also it provides yet one more use for natural gas as we continue to figure out better and more uses for natural gas in the region.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any other discussion?
Sure. Commissioner Kalk, thanks for setting that up and covering all the details. Just a couple comments. During the hearing, the company outlined that their latest load forecasts, which were, you know, not their most current, but the ones that they used for this application, showed that they were going to be 1,000 megawatts short of power. And so this is an effort to begin to address that shortage and maintain the reliability in this area for the energy industry and all the supporting industries that have spun off as a result of this growth. So it's important for the industry. It's also important for residents who live in this area. They all share the same power, the same power lines. The grid doesn't distinguish between an oil rig or a home, somebody cooking dinner. And so the needs in that area are significant for energy. It takes a lot of energy to produce energy, and this is what we're seeing in that area. And like Commissioner Kalk mentioned, this is one piece of a broader, longer-term solution to the power demands in that area that include not only these kind of peaking units, but baseload generation and also significant investments in transmission. The whole portfolio needs to be upgraded, and there's a number of projects in place to address that. A lot of them we are working with as we maintain our responsibility to help ensure reliable, affordable power for the consumers and the citizens and the industry in the state.
Is there any further discussion?
I just want to point out, in perspective, $102 million project. And, it's a peaking plant and it's going to use some natural gas and create some jobs. And that's almost how we look at these things now. But, in most states around the country, a $102 million project would have the governor and the congressional delegation and a bunch of dignitaries in a celebration. And if we didn't have these kinds of things going on all over, we would too. But just this remarkable surge of activity in North Dakota causes this to just get shifted to BK1 and we kind of move on. But it is a remarkable project in that way. But the other thing that I want to point out is it, and both my fellow commissioners have pointed this out, it's a peaking plant. And, I don't think consumers can be expected to be studying all this and knowing how we define these various generation facilities and all that. And I think a lot of people will look at this as well. There's another 90 megawatts of power here and a $102 million project. And they see all the increased activity, and anyone can figure out that that means they need a lot more power. And so here it is. But those people don't want this to be running too often. They want it to be there for when the wind's not blowing and when it's really hot or really cold or that sort of thing. But this is not a combined cycle gas plant or a coal plant or a nuclear plant that they want to be paying for having running with any amount of consistency. This is strictly a peaking plant, and I think we need to emphasize that to people, what you had mentioned earlier. This does not displace the need for baseload generation that they want to pay for most of their power production.
Absolutely. I forgot to add one thing, too, in my talking about the project. We did ask a lot of questions about their emergency response plan, and they will be filing with the commission their final emergency response plan that will get blessed by the county and blessed by the federal agencies, because the response plans for natural gas plants are need to be a little bit more intricate than some of the other response plans that might be needed. But since Basin already has the existing plant, it will more than likely just be modifications to their current plan.
So. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the Commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission's damage prevention enforcement action concerning Rodenbaugh Trucking and Excavating, Inc., case number GS13-383.
Second.
Rodenbaugh Trucking and Excavating Company is a company with its principal offices in Surrey, North Dakota. The complaint was filed by MDU, whose corporate office is right here in Bismarck. The commission received a third-party damage complaint from MDU on June 20th of 2013, so it's been out there for a little while. Let's see here. Based on the investigation, it turns out the staff investigation that Rodenbaugh personnel began excavation as defined under North Dakota code in the area of 1707 22nd Avenue Southwest in the city of Minot. They were installing a sewer and water line, and based on the investigation, staff concluded that a 2-inch gas main was damaged during the excavation. The amount of the damages was approximately $103. The operator, MDU, has been reimbursed for the damages. No one was injured. No customers were affected. And really, the company just didn't bother to call once again. And so in this case, fine of $1,000 will be assessed. And, you know, we continue to see these every week, and I think we need to continue the discussion about, we've only seen a couple repeat offenders. Most of these tend to be first-time offenders, but we still are having way too many first-time offenders. And so we'll continue. I'm glad that the companies are and the individuals are submitting these for our staff to work through. And I look through today. Actually, with today, this will be the 24th, with the next one, this will be the 24th individual fine the commission has levied. We actually have 24 others that are in front of us right now that Julie and Aaron are working through. So we're really seeing an uptake in reporting, which is good. But we are still seeing where we've got companies that are just unwilling to call. And when at times where our staff tries to work with them, now they're even becoming unwilling to work with our staff. So the next meeting, we're going to have a motion that's more than likely going to set up some more hearings. That we basically just started having hearings on these, and there'll be no more consent decrees because there's now getting to be people that are just saying, hey, listen, we're not interested. So that's I'll call it a disturbing turn, quite honestly. But get back to this motion. I think the staff did a great job on this, and we'll continue to enforce these, but also have an eye on what is next needed to protect the infrastructure in the ground.
We have a motion and second. Is there a further discussion?
I'll just add that I thought in this case the owner of the company submitted a nice letter kind of accepting responsibility and addressing the two things that I think are the most important for these folks, which is making sure they have the right protocols in place and making sure that their staff are trained. And that seems to be over and over again. The problem is the staff that are conducting the digs aren't trained in how they're supposed to do it safely. And the protocol for, 48 hours notice and making sure that you have the locates in place. So I appreciate a company like this saying it was our fault. We're taking responsibility. We're going to follow the laws. We know it's important and we're going to do a better job.
Is there any further discussion?
I think just to add to that training component is so huge because, in a case like this where they called but then didn't wait the right amount of time for everything to get marked, I was just trying to think through, okay, what might have happened here? And I know I'm speculating, but, I could see a company having a crew out there and they know that the boss called it in. And maybe one or more utilities have come out and flagged their stuff. And so they've got a ticket number that's been called in. They see stuff flagged. Okay, I guess we can start digging now, even though the time hasn't passed. And so it's probably that training component that didn't quite get where it needed to be. And people went out and started digging before all the utilities got there and marked. So, they got part of it right, but clearly the training wasn't adequate because they didn't get all of it right. Mm-hmm. So. Hopefully people learn from the mistakes of others and that this will ultimately lessen and not grow as a problem, like you were saying earlier.
Sure. Ironically, Aaron Mormon, our pipeline safety guru, is going to be leading up a seminar/training next Wednesday here in town for North and South Dakota, so I'm sure we'll talk about this at that convention. So,
is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Item BK3. I move the commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission's damage prevention enforcement action concerning Buffalo Concrete LLP, case number GS13788.
Second.
Buffalo Concrete is a North Dakota limited liability partnership with its principal offices in Mandan, and MDU is a corporation right here in Bismarck. In September of 2013, the commission received a third-party damage complaint from MDU alleging the violation by Buffalo Concrete of North Dakota Century Code one-call portion of the law. Based on the investigation, staff concluded that in September of 2013, Buffalo Concrete personnel began an excavation under North Dakota Century Code while performing an installation of a water line at 5213 Beaver Creek Place, Bismarck, North Dakota. Buffalo Creek did not provide an excavation notice as required by law at least 48 hours before the excavation. Based on the investigation, staff concluded that a 2-inch plastic gas main was damaged during the excavation. The amount of the damage was approximately $1,694. The operator has been reimbursed for the damages. No customers lost service, and no one was hurt. Once again, the company's taken ownership of this. But, you know, these companies are hitting, you know, gas lines, and that's where we continue to be very fortunate, and we just have to keep the awareness of everything we previously talked about. The fine in this case will be $1,000 payable to North Dakota Public Service Commission within 10 days of this order, and that, of course, will go into the general fund.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Daryl.
If I might.
Yes, sir.
It didn't really have to do with the vote on that or anything, but I'm unsure now. When companies pay a penalty like that, do they know that that's going to the general fund? Or do they think, yep, here I am putting money out there to these people to come after me again?
I think a lot of the companies know it goes to the general fund, but I would suspect some would think it goes right to us. So we maybe just need to reinforce that when we call them.
It might be something.
We're not trying to line our coffers with this.
Right. Thank you.
And that's the same for speeding tickets too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. Except that doesn't go into the general fund. That goes into the Common Schools Trust Fund.
Oh, here we go.
So if you go a little over, you're supporting the kids.
I never looked at it that way, Commissioner. I look forward to that next time I'm up on Highway 200 going through the Hazen area.
Is that a defense officer or just trying to generate more income for the school kids?
Moving on.
Moving on.
I'll try that, Randy.
All righty then. Item BK4. I move the commission adopt the order granting variance in the application of Great River Energy for a variance of special condition number 4 of route permit number 1 regarding minimum ground clearance of 4 conductor spans along its 400 kV DC line in Burley, Kidder, and McLean counties, case number PU13-900.
Second.
This one, when we did the first order on the announcement, I thought it was very interesting. This is route permit number 1. So this was the very first permit the commission ever issued on a transmission line when that became the law. And back at that time, what's interesting to note is special condition 4 of that order dealt with how high the line needed to be above the ground. There was no particular National Electric Safety Code standard at that time, so the commission, in its wisdom, picked a number, and they picked 35 feet. And so what I thought was very good is the company certainly has paid attention to what the initial provisions of the order required, and when they were out there doing some of their work, they noticed that 4 particular spans were less than that 35 feet. One was 34 feet, 31.4, 34.9, and 34.8. So there's been some changes, whether that's hydrology or line sag, whatever it might be, but the current standards for this type of line, if it was built today, it'd be 28.1. So even given the variance, they're still well above the National Electric Safety Code standards. So I certainly support this motion, and I do thank the company for being alert and paying attention to the orders that signed by this commission are in effect forever. And this would have been in 1976, so it's certainly in order. And thank GRE for paying close attention to the orders.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Now I just had one more thought, Daryl. I think it's just an interesting pontification. It might be interesting.
Don't be so sure.
Yeah, really. A lot of the things that the three of us, Randy and I and Julie, are working on is we're trying to figure out what the rules might be for, you know, wind decommissioning or things that really aren't defined in law, and we're trying to make the best decisions. And I look back at the commission in 76, there really was no standard of what above-ground clearance should be. So they picked a standard of 35 feet, which certainly was reasonable. But I think that we're kind of doing a lot of that right now, that some of the things we might decide, some commission 40 years from now might look back and say, well, that's what they did at that point in time, and then some of those things get solidified. So I thought that was unique. All right. Item BK5. I move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in the application of Northern State Power Company for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to add a transformer to NSP's Prairie Substation in Grand Forks and extend approximately 1,100 feet of 230 kV electric transmission line to interconnect with Minn Kota Power Cooperative's Prairie Substation in Grand Forks County, North Dakota, case number PU14-126.
Second.
This order today actually just issues the notice that NSP has filed the application for a certificate of public convenience and necessity to add the transformer, extend their lines. Comments and requests for hearing must be received by April 30th of this year. If deemed appropriate, the commission can determine the matter without a hearing. So that's all this motion does today. But I did want to give a little background because this is unique since I've been here of this particular case. Because what caught my attention is why NSP would be asking for a PCNN to basically, at first glance, just replace a transformer. But it's much more than that. It's replacing the transformer and extending the line 1,100 feet. So that's really what it does, that they're extending their facilities outside the city limits. So that's why the PCNN is required. But a little background on this. This is a project as a result of a study, 2010 voltage stability study, that basically showed that in the area of Grand Forks, there was some concern about voltage stability and some of the problems that could be taking place. And based on that study, there was a couple options that NSP was presented with, and one of them was install this transformer, build that 1,100 feet of line over to the Minn Kota substation so they could basically run parallel with the sub if they need to. And I'm not an electrical engineer, but it makes sense. Then you can stabilize things with the larger sub mix. But what I think is really interesting is that this study that was done back in 2009, here it takes, you know, 3-4 years before it actually gets to projects because these things take a long time. And as we continue to figure out what the impact of CO2 rules are to our baseload, as Commissioner Crisman talked about in Julie, you know, I have a concern that we don't quite know how these things might affect our reliability till way down the road. So this is certainly a good project. I'm glad to see the company is participating in these kind of things. But it just heightens the awareness of understanding what we're doing with our energy generation because there's so many things going on out there that can affect reliability. And thank NSP for being able to put this project forward, and we'll see how it plays out.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
And one piece, the cost of the project is approximately $9 to $17 million, so there's quite a range. And I suspect that'll be on what the transformer costs come in, and these are pretty expensive. So.
But oh, are we in discussion?
Yeah, no, you're in discussion.
I don't recall looking through the capital improvements, but I'm assuming since this is in the works now and they're hoping to do this, that it's part of the plan that we have covered in the next 4-year rate plan. So the customers will not see, if this is approved, would not see an increase in their rates. This is already part of their capital plans and included in the long-term build-out of the company that we evaluated during the rate case.
That's a great point, because that's what caught my attention, is normally they wouldn't come to us for changes in a substation, but it's only by extending that line into the Minn Kota system that required the PCNN. So I'm sure you're right on that. Good catch.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And finally, item BK6. I move the commission find the March 12, 2014 complaint filed by AT&T Corporation states a prima facie case and serve the complaint on the respondent, Broadvox-CLEC, LLC, case number PU14-117.
Second.
We, ironically enough, last Friday or 2 Fridays ago, we had a meeting with all the telephone people, and we said, you know, we haven't seen any telephone things for a while, and sure enough, this showed up the next day. So what we have here is AT&T is a corporation, of course, a competitive local exchange carrier registered to do business in North Dakota. Broadvox, maybe folks haven't heard about, is a company that also provides services in North Dakota. And AT&T filed this complaint regarding the tariff amendments and requested the commission ordered staff to further investigate the amendments and to schedule a hearing on their appropriateness. In addition, the automatic approval of the tariff amendment should be suspended. So what we have here is basically AT&T does not agree with what's been filed by Broadvox is how they would do dispute resolutions if there are questions about billing. And some of the things that the amendments filed by Broadvox say, it binds carriers to a dispute resolution process, whether it be face-to-face. There's some things that quite honestly, AT&T does not like about the dispute resolution. So there's no particular issues at play right now other than the dispute resolution. So this sets up that it's a prima facie case. So I would imagine that now this will be served upon Broadvox. They'll be given the chance to respond. We'll more than likely schedule a hearing on it. and we'll see how this plays out. But this is the first time I've seen something like this. We have the situation going on right now where the different rates are eventually going to mesh out because of FCC guidance between intrastate and interstate. We're still working call completion issues, but this is the first time I've seen a complaint filed about the dispute resolution process. But I would remind our listeners out there that this commission spent a long time with Mid-Continent and Nemont on dispute resolution. The process that took us over 2.5 years to – the complaint was filed. It was sent to arbitration. There was a lot of dispute about the arbitration process. And once it got into arbitration, there was even dispute about the outcome. So I can see why AT&T is doing this, because they don't want to have – they probably have learned lessons in other venues. So we'll certainly give Broadbox their chance to respond, and then we'll schedule a hearing if needed.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
All right, thank you, Daryl. That concludes the items today for me. Commissioner Crispin.
Mr. Chairman, in order to make sure that a participant in a very simple case doesn't get confused with a participant in a complex case, if there's no objection, I'm going to do RC3 right before RC2.
Whatever you do, sir, that sounds good to me.
Okay.
Even though you just confused me, but I'm okay with it.
Starting with RC1, I move the commission amend contract number AM-679-13 with Pleasant & Sons Construction Incorporated to increase the total contract amount to $225,000 for sinkhole filling and other maintenance work at abandoned coal mines.
Second.
Last June, the commission entered into a contract in the amount of $100,000 with Pleasant & Sons Construction for sinkhole filling at numerous locations in western North Dakota. And based on the number of dangerous sinkholes that had been reported when the bid package was issued more than a year ago, and that number was around 30, and I'll be coming back to that in a moment, we thought $100,000 was sufficient for the sinkhole filling work for 2013 and 2014. Therefore, the contract end date was set at December 31st of 2014. So due to the wet conditions last year, many new sinkholes formed, and that greatly increased the number of sinkholes filled. Work on this project began last August, and about, not 30, but 180 sinkholes were filled at 12 sites. In addition, some erosion repair work at the Beechler Valva site was carried out under this contract. So last September, the commission approved a motion to allow staff to issue change orders to increase the contract amount with Pleasant & Sons up to $150,000. With the additional work done last fall, the total spent to date is nearly $129,000, leaving about $21,000 for all of 2014. We expect nearly all of that amount will be needed just to fill the large and dangerous sinkholes that appeared over the winter along public roads near Bowman and Dickinson. Other less dangerous sinkholes have been reported, and others will almost certainly develop this spring and summer and should be filled this year. Therefore, I'm requesting that the commission approve an amendment to increase the total contract amount to $225,000. This matter was also discussed with legal staff and with the state procurement office, and both agree it would be better to amend the contract rather than issuing additional change orders. It appears we have enough federal funds in our 2013 and 2014 construction grants for the increased work, as well as the other projects planned for this year. Pleasant & Sons is willing to do the additional work under the original terms of the contract, which will have low unit prices compared to the two previous sinkhole filling projects.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Okay, RC3, I move the condition and adopt an order in case number GE-14-127, canceling facility-based grain buyer license number 2111, issued to Souris River Cooperative at Antler, North Dakota, and ordering that business at Antler, North Dakota is discontinued effective immediately.
Second.
The licensing division received a request to discontinue business from the Souris River Cooperative of Newburgh, North Dakota, for its facility at Antler. Antler was operated under facility-based grain buyer license. The facility is empty, and it will not be used for buying grain. However, it will be used in the spring to weigh anhydrous.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, then to wrap up, RC2, I move the Commission file the report and recommendation of trustee with Wells County District Court, along with the related motion and support documents, in Earth Harvest Mills Incorporated, doing business as Dakota Prairie Organic Flour Company, Grain Warehouse Insolvency Case Number GE-13-193. I further move that once the report and recommendation is approved by the district court, the licensing director be authorized to pay all valid claims as soon as possible.
Second.
Earth Harvest Mills, and that's how I'll refer to them from this point on, but they were also doing business as Dakota Prairie Organic Flour Company. They operated a grain warehouse at Harvey, North Dakota. Their license was issued December 30th of 2004, and as part of the licensing process, Earth Harvest Mills filed a bond in the amount of $50,000. On April 26th of last year, 2013, a letter was filed for collection of outstanding funds owed by Earth Harvest Mills for grain that had been delivered. Subsequently, 25 others filed letters for collection of outstanding funds owed to them. Let's see, what date did I say that was? That was October 26th, so just a few days later, the week of April 29th of last year, our inspector confirmed there was no grain inventory at the Harvey facility. On May 1st, the Public Service Commission filed an application for appointment as trustee. On May 2nd, the district court issued an order prohibiting Earth Harvest Mills from compromising potential assets of the trust fund until the court issued its order. On June 14th, the district court issued an order appointing the Public Service Commission as trustee of the trust fund. Ultimately, 26 claims were filed, totaling $4,351,571.30. Again, as a reminder, there are the credit sale contract claims that are partially covered by the indemnity fund, and all other claims are considered non-credit sale contract claims, and we usually refer to those as cash claims, and that's how I'll refer to them in this discussion. So when the $50,000 bond proceeds are paid over to us as the trustee, there will be funds available from that trust fund to pay each of the cash claimants approximately 62% of their respective valid claim. There were 7 of those cash claimants, and their valid claim amounts total $80,973.26. We recommend the payments to each of the valid credit sale contract claimants be made as specified in the Century Code in the amount of 80% of their valid credit sale contract claim, and those are capped at $280,000 per customer. We're recommending payments on the valid credit sale contracts totaling $2,402,901.24. Now, at 80%, we're not going to be subtracting from the indemnity fund nearly 80% of that amount. The amount that will ultimately be paid here from the indemnity fund is $948,952.69. And so it begs a question, well, that's only about 40% of 2.4 million. And the reason is two of the claimants are well in excess of that $280,000 cap. And that's why the numbers don't quite jive as one might expect them to. Other than those two claimants with the very large claims, all the others will be receiving their 80%. The court has scheduled a hearing on this matter for May 14th at 3:30 p.m. in Wells County District Court. And I guess just in summation, just over a year ago, we had three insolvencies on our plate, and this one that wasn't quite there yet, but we knew it was teetering. And it's been a kind of a painful process. There just never is a good resolution when something like that happens. You know, you do the best you can and want to call that good, but it's never really good. And we've made tremendous progress, I feel. With this one, all four of those, we will have our report and recommendations out. Several of them have been already approved by district court, and we're waiting through the appeal process before the checks can go out, but we're very close to that. I expect no different on this one. You know, I think that our staff has really put together a strong recommendation and has done good research, and I'm confident that the court will approve this recommendation, and after that appeal process, these checks will go out as well. And the next step from here is, I think we've all learned a lot, even though these cases are all completely unique and different from one another, and it's hard to connect dots and figure out what to do. But this one moved along much faster than old ones did. And I think through more effort, we can even find ways to make them go faster yet. But, I mean, this is a major move in the right direction. And I think that even the bigger thing that now we need to move forward with is trying to find ways that we can see these coming and prevent them, hopefully, from happening in the future instead of just resolving them when they do happen.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just like to say a couple things. First of all, thanks, Randy, for your work on this and pushing it through. And thanks to staff as well for your good work on evaluating all the claims and making sure that what people are asking for is what they should be getting, and taking out things like trucking costs or costs for things that are outside of grain sold that aren't part of the valid claims, which is frankly why you see that we've got a $4.3 million total claims and only 2.5 of them are valid. That means that our staff looked through everything and said, this counts, this is legitimate, this doesn't. This fund isn't intended to cover losses in that category. And it's really important work, and I want to just applaud the staff for doing a good job with that. These insolvencies, really, this one underscores two things for me. First of all, it underscores the importance for producers of following best practices like converting their scale tickets in a timely manner and also really knowing full well who they're doing business with, scrutinizing those people and making sure that you can trust your products with them. And then secondly, it really, for me, emphasizes the need to remain steadfast in our work with the producers, with the industry, with state policymakers, and our staff to evaluate the programs that we have for protecting producers and making sure that they are strong and modern and reflect the needs and the realities of the industry today. And we've begun that process, and I think we'll continue it. And I look forward to continuing working with everyone on that.
Is there further discussion?
There's one other thing. I kind of started touching on this and then lost my concentration, I guess. But the three cases that have already been through district court. These aren't simple cases by any means. One of them in particular had a challenge being mounted and even an extension of time for the challenge to gather their evidence. And at the end of the day, no one has even brought any evidence to challenge any of this. And I think that's a commendation to our staff that, you know, our findings, while they may be sad, that the realities of someone not being able to pay their customers and the customers not getting fully restored, but they're accurate. And I think as a commission, we can feel very proud of that, that these take a while to get through, but when they're done, they're right. And I feel good about this report as well moving forward.
Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
Thank you, sir. Commissioner Fedorchak.
I got the light load today. I'll move forward with my first, my one and only motion today. I move the commission adopt the order approving electric service area agreement in the joint application of Cass County Electric Cooperative, Inc. and the City of Valley City for approval of a service area agreement to establish and designate service locations to be served by Cass Electric and the city in and around Valley City, North Dakota, case number PU-13-898.
Second.
In December, Cass Electric and the City of Valley City filed an application with the PSC to establish service areas and designate service area locations in and around Valley City. On January 15th, we issued a notice of opportunity for hearing, and which provided until February 28th for public comments. And on February 12th, the commission had an informal hearing with the parties involved, both the City of Valley City and Cass Electric, to talk through this. Basically, what it is, it's a limited service agreement that was needed in sort of short order to provide a cooperative agreement for serving an area just outside the city boundaries, where the City of Valley City wanted to add an industrial park, and they wanted to have their municipal electric supply, their Valley City Electric, to provide the service in that area. And they sat down with Cass Electric, worked it out, talked through, you know, what made the most sense, and Cass basically agreed to allow the city to serve that area and very orderly, efficient way, took care of this issue. And the next step will be to work out a broader agreement for the entire outside area of Valley City, a larger area that will be more long-term and address the needs of the growing community for a broader level. So, but this is a great agreement by these two parties, very reasonable, and it's the most logical to have the people involved in this work out the details of who should serve where, rather than us coming in as the outsiders and trying to hammer that out. They can tell who's got the best infrastructure and can do this most efficiently, and I think it's really working out well.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
I would just add out that this will be the 17th service area agreement that the commission has approved, and this will be the first one that deals with a co-op and a municipal. So we've had co-op and co-op that we've approved, because that's our role, to approve these. And we've had investor-owned and co-op, but now marks the co-op and a municipal city. So another first for the North Dakota Public Service Commission.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Commissioner, anything
That's
further
it.
For the
That's
good team?
That's the end of my portfolio today.
Okay, thank you. Just a couple notes as we look forward between now and the next meeting. Let's see here. We have some work sessions on Monday dealing with the Basin Electric 345 KV line. Next Tuesday we'll be in Ellendale for a hearing on MDU Otter Tail, 10 miles of a 345 KV line. And our next regular scheduled commission meeting is the 9th, April 2nd. We talked about the Pipeline Safety Conference that Aaron and the crew will be hosting here. And I would just add one thing. Yesterday we had a work session, we being the three commissioners and our budget people, about upcoming decisions for the next session. The governor hasn't issued out the actually budget guidelines. Those will come for a while, but we thought it was worthwhile to get together and talk about some broad themes. And we kind of, you know, we're going to look at equity packages for employees. We're going to look at oil impact. We're going to look at, you know, new equipment that we might need, where maybe Jim will get another new soil probe that he hadn't had since 1972. We're looking at those kind of things. But the big thing was having us to get together and talk if there's any major structure changes that we're looking at. And it was the first time the three of us were able to get together and talk about the whether we want to pursue a hazardous liquid programs on intrastate lines. We'd had a lot of individual discussions, and we had meetings with PHMSA, but yesterday, I think, was the first time the three of us basically agreed that we're going to prepare that in the budget package. Now, we'll see what might come out of the governor's pipeline task force. We'll see what might come out of other groups, but we figured it was important to start us with the planning process, and then as all these other different groups continue to gel, if it ends up being us that pushes it forward, then we want to be ready. If it ends up going somewhere else, then we can adjust with that accordingly. But the big thing, I think, for me personally is that we now are committed to preparing what we think a program would look like, and then we'll see whether it lies with the PSC or somewhere else. But I thought that was a very good meeting yesterday, and you know, there's so much going on, but you have to always be looking out, because before long the session will be here, and if we haven't done our work throughout the summer, we don't have a budget that lets us do our job, and it's only because of, you know, commissions beforehand that gave us the resources to do the things that we need to do. So I don't know if you have any
Mr.
comments.
Chairman, on this, ma'am. I do have two things I thought I might add. Just they might be of interest to our members of the media who are here, and that is, in our admin meeting, we'll be talking about a couple things that I think might be of interest. First of all, I've scheduled for April 9th informal a presentation by the researchers up at the ERC who are going to come in and give kind of an overview on their research on carbon capture, on carbon sequestration, and in Bakken enhanced oil recovery. So they'll be attending on the 9th at 1:30, our informal, and providing an overview of what they've learned, and it's a good opportunity for us to hear about that research and determine how we might want to use it for our discussions moving forward. So that's first thing. And then secondly, I want to talk to my colleagues about setting up a meeting with Burlington Northern Santa Fe, an upcoming informal or just a separate meeting, to get an report from them on their service backlog, some of the issues with getting grain cars to the elevators in a timely manner, and how they're managing to address the needs of all the customers in North Dakota, and also their safety upgrades that they've invested in the state, and kind of give us an overview of those sorts of things. So those are two kind of big issues coming forward that we'll be addressing, in addition to our normal service to the public on all the applications we receive.
Absolutely. All right. Commissioner Crispin, anything?
Nothing more to add.
All right. Well, we'd be happy to try to answer any questions from our colleagues in the media or others.
Just to go backwards on the Valley City, where is that particular industrial park, and is it annexed yet?
It is south and, south and east of the city. And I don't know if it's annexed yet or not. It didn't sound like it to me at the hearing, but and it was CAS's territory. It would have been in their service territory, but they gave it up to the city so that they could provide service in their own industrial park.
And what I understand studio saying is that this is a kind of a first step.
Correct.
And there'll be more discussions regarding service around Valley City.
Correct, because this just deals with one sort of maybe 3-4 acre square outside of the south and the east edge of Valley City. It does. Yep.
Just on the Lonesome Creek, so basin expects to start construction on the new turbine in April, the news release says here, and I think Mr. Collins said in May. I just wanted to
say. Fair enough. The actual order we have down, beginning construction phase two on May 1st, 2014. So there may have been updates to that, but I think we might want to tweak that to say the same number. I would go with May, because that's what our order is. And it's an estimate, of course. I would think May would be first.
the date in the news release maybe came from the application, and then that
got adjusted.
Yeah, so it's probably me.
Good catch, Mike.
Commissioner Fedorchuk, you mentioned the basin talking about the 1,000 megawatt need for baseload in the future. Well, how far out is that?
That was more in the near term. I think within the next several years,
3 to 5. I think.
Yeah,
there's a lot of disparity in the numbers. We've heard as high as 3,000 megawatts needed by Basin Electric and MDU over the next 20 years, and how they peel that back. It's, I think the 1,000 is within the near-term, you know, stability 3 to 5 range. But there's a lot of energy that's needed out west, and these 45-megawatt peakers are not going to be the long-term solution.
And they admitted in the hearing, that's what the number that's in our order, but they admitted in the hearing that's really conservative, and it's based on load forecasts from a couple years back when they first initiated this project, and those load forecasts, they know, are outdated, and they've never seen them go anything but up since all of this development started.
Since we're on basin, the informal hearing?
Work session.
Oh, sure.
On the power line. How close are you to having a route permit for that power line?
Boy, it's always tough to predict what three of us will decide. I think that there's still a couple big things that I'm personally waiting on, and I want to see Monday where those are at, to see where some of the NEPA documentation is at, to see how close they are to they being the basin to getting something back on NEPA with a FONSI finding of no significant impact. And I think it's perhaps too close to tell till after that work session, Dave. I'd hate to give a number until I get a chance to talk to my colleagues. I don't know if they would. There's a lot of moving pieces, but a lot of it, I think, is the federal review of what they may do on the NEPA. I'm very curious to see what that timeline looks like because it continues to slip.
How much contact have you had from members of the public regarding that particular line?
Initially, we had, of course, the hearing, and there was quite a robust hearings we had throughout it. And then afterwards, you know, quite honestly, when it's a pending case, the public comment really goes to the consumer affairs person. So we try to avoid the ex parte communication. So a lot initially, and I've certainly, you know, it's hard to be immune from all the discussion taking place around the state on it. But there's certainly a lot of discussion, I think, and a lot of it is based on as they deal with what their NEPA might be. But for me personally, no discussion except after the hearing or during the hearing.
Remind me, NEPA stands for?
National Environmental Policy Act. They three different levels. They have the category exclusion, EA Environmental Assessment, or EIS Environmental Impact Study. And this one was a full EIS, and then the Rural Utility Service and, the Forest Service and others are the ones. The Rural Utility Service is the lead on it, and then the other ones are participating agents, and they've had a lot of discussion. And, you know, in some of these cases, the commission will, you know, basically say, okay, listen, as long as this comes back, finding no significant impact, we'll move forward on it like we did in the Minn Kota line. But in this one, there's so many variables right now. I'd like to see, for me personally, a little more clarity is what they might be thinking before I make any decisions what we're thinking, what I'm thinking. But it is important that this line gets a decision quickly as possible once we get the record complete.
And you probably realize this, but the RUS is involved and ultimately has to give their stamp of approval because Basin is receiving funding from RUS to support the construction. So that's why they have a role to play in this, and that's why there's federal involvement as well.
So just on the elevator insolvency, just one quick question. There are still appeals that are possible. What's the experience been about clearing up the appeals, any time frames or anything like that, if there are appeals, you know?
Well, all of these, when we issue our report and recommendation, have to have a hearing in district court. This one is scheduled for May 14th, I believe it was. And when the judge and someone can bring an argument to that, or they cannot, and when the judge issues his or her decision, then it takes a few days to get everything all filed and that sort of thing, like maybe a week, And then there's a 60-day appeal period for someone to appeal that judge's decision. And when that expires, then we can go ahead and get the money out to the producers. So probably, you know, 70 days or something.
Okay. Mike, Dave, anything else? Anything further?
Just the BNSF meeting, is that, it hasn't been scheduled yet?
No, we'll schedule that at our meeting today. It'll be on our advanced schedule, though, so you'll be able to see when it is once we schedule it.
Okay, Commissioner Fedorchuk, anything else?
Nope.
Commissioner Chrisman?
Nope.
All right, going once, going twice. All right, we'll close the regular portion of our meeting, and how about 5 after 11 we reconvene? All right, thank you all.